accession number 26852, Real 6.
Mr. Coop, Real 6. We're talking about your time from June onwards, June 1953 onwards, through to, I think, March 54, in the Gloucester Valley area, camp in the Gloucester Valley area. Any other ways that you got, that you had to accustom yourself to the sort of conditions of life you were living under?
Yes, two things. The rain, which was appalling.
Tell us about that. What was the problem with that?
I've just never seen anything like it in my life. I mean, it was as though the sea descended on you. No matter what you wore of any type, no clothing protected you at all from being soaked from top to bottom. Might just as well take it all off and walk around in your underpants, and a lot of people did.
Was that a problem? Was the flooding? You were near
the flooding was appalling. We would have to cross the dry riverbed when we went there first to the regiment to get our food. And we're talking about a wide, dry river, which would take us at least 20 minutes to half an hour to go from our tent across the river, directly across, to the mess tent on the other side. And I can remember coming back from that meal once, finding it totally impossible to get back to camp because the river had risen so fast and so quickly and was so deep and so fierce. So fierce it was ripping some of the bridges away just down below our camp. How we actually got over, I can't remember, and then we did get back. But the force of the water, the speed at which it had come down from the hills, is something I was never expected to experience anywhere. Incredible. When the riverbed was dry, it was a force of amusement to us because we had a wicked sense of humour, and probably we should have been shot for it. We collected all the ammunition that had been lying around, and there were tons of it. Took away the casings of the shells and things like that and got out of their light, buried it. Some of these guys that I was working with were miners' sons, they knew what they were doing. And we would set off charges in the river just because we liked to see the guard turn out on the other side. If anybody caught us, it was a very serious offence, military offence. But it's the sort of amusing thing that stupid young men did.
So no particular point, other than to make a bang.
Just make a bang and run away and say, ha, 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 look, we got you kids. Yeah.
Now, you said there were two problems. One was the rain. What was the other one?
Heat.
What was that like then?
That was like being in the Sahara. I mean, the exchange of climate there was the extremes. So somebody had looked on the War Office map and said, oh God, Korea, it's near Japan. It must be hot, send them out in summer clothes. And of course, we ended up there in bloody winter. And then in the summer, our winter clothes came through. Wonderful.
And how bad was the heat? I mean,
impossible. It was impossible. Breathing was difficult. As far as playing a wind instrument is concerned, it's sometimes impossible. People had to be very careful with the way they treated themselves. Amusing things did happen.
Tell us some examples.
Just of amusing things. I remember being woken up one night by a regimental policeman in his white belt, looking very, very smart, and his cross gaiters and whatever it was, it bloody war, whispering in my ear and said, have you pinched a tank? We had all stand outside the bloody tent and be cross-examined about which one of we stupid buggers had pinched a tank. I mean, what the hell are they talking about? What actually had happened, of course, was that the tank regiment had a camp down the road, and somebody gone in and pinched their mascot, which was a small automatic tank, and ripped it away, and they were trying to get it back. But remember, have you pinched a tank?
Any others?
Yes, but I'm not sure I should tell you.
It's all right by us.
I remember there was one particular officer who was not very well liked. And he built himself, we had to build him a separate private shithouse for himself. And we could watch him each evening taking his little tilly lamp as he walked out to go and form his natural ablutions, as he put it. And somebody, somewhere along the line, had sawn through the trestles. So that you could, it was quite interesting, it was like a shadow play, because he hadn't realised that the light inside his latrine cast his shadow on the wall, so it was as though we were watching silhouette. Many fell through into it. Very few people went sympathetically to help him. But he did eventually get it. He had bloody drone and stuff, didn't he? So there are all sorts of very unpleasant things like that. And the worst one, I think, that I ever heard, of course, and I will tell it with a certain amount of pleasure, was a band sergeant who was conducting the rehearsals and was particularly authoritative and demanding of a particular performance, told the double B flat bass player off, who only had om-poms to play om-pom, that he wasn't playing them very well, and he certainly wasn't in time, and he wasn't following the beat. And he, at the end of the rehearsal, said, well, I play the double bass, double B flat bass. So tomorrow you will lend me your instrument and I will show you how it's done. That night, solemnly, all the brass players had sat in one tent, getting drunk and enjoying themselves. And they took the mouthpiece of this particular instrument and rubbed it round all the major parts of their body, particularly the scrotum. And the following day, these sober young men, playing something from Carmen, la 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 la, where the bass part was boom, boom, boom. And this sergeant took the mouthpiece, put it solemnly into his instrument, and everybody enjoyed watching him play. People had terrible sense of humour. A similar one was a piece of music called In the Monastery Garden by Cotelbe, where the famous part is where there's bird song, which is played on a little tremolo thing that you fill with water and blow into it. And the percussion instrument had forgotten to put the water in it. So he peed in it and handed it over to the senior who hadn't realised. Oh dear, what mean and unpleasant people bandsmen can be.
Anything else?
Well, I think the guy who developed an extraordinary capacity for saying how good he was at his instrument and had been ordered to play a particular piece of gypsy music, which was very difficult. And he was quite competent at it. But he kept on insisting how good he was. Bumptious, overconfident fellow. And we all stood round, waiting for him to come onto the stage to play his part, Jetson, the bloody gypsy, or whatever it was, he was doing the thing. And the orchestra was in the pit, waiting to accompany him. The first 10 bars were played, waiting for his entry, and he brought the instrument up, brought the bow down, not a sound. Nothing. Did it again, nothing. Because somebody along the line, instead of putting resin on his bow, had put soap. So I don't know why that still amuses me.
Was he an NCO as well?
Yes. Yes. But I also remember a very talented trombonist. He was one of the lads that had come through the Borstal training, as far as I remember it. And somebody whom I had a great respect for, because he played well, competently. And I suspect that if he ever went on with that instrument after leaving the army, he would have been a recognized virtuoso. He was very good. But he's also drunk most of his life. And he could play well standing up or sitting down, but at any other angle of the body he had great difficulties. And on the one occasion when we were playing a concert for, I think, the Danes somewhere or other, the bandmaster decided to come with us instead of the band sergeant. The band sergeant was very tolerant, knew what he was doing. Bandmaster was a little more distant, hadn't really quite clocked on to what was going on. And at the end of one particularly well played and applauded piece of music that this young man had played, the bandmaster insisted on, he bowed to take the applause. And of course the guy didn't want to bow. But the more he resisted, the more the bandmaster insisted he bowed. When he bowed, he fell off the platform because he couldn't keep his balance.
He was drunk.
He was drunk. But he'd been playing brilliantly.
Did you have any special pals from the band at the time? People you can remember
yes,
now?
Yes, yes, I can. And it's funny, you don't always remember the names, but you remember their presence.
That's what they were like. You know what?
They were young men of talent who I hadn't always recognised that they had talent. They were young men who were honest and straightforward. Men you could trust. In times of great stress, you would rely on them. I suppose the discipline that we talked about earlier in this played well, because it gave you a comradeship. And you were able to work for your people and you were part of a group. But because you were also involved in an art which required you to be an individual, you could also think around the ultimate response that you expect. In other words, we developed a sense of appropriateness, which I'm not sure that men in the rifle companies did. And it made you ask the major questions. Your friends would defend you and stand by you in the most difficult situations. And you could rely on them if it was necessary. And that was part of the training, but it was also part of the fact that the music had brought out the essential individual characters. And it made you ask questions that you found uncomfortable when you were there. Why were you there? What was all this about? Was it right? Where did you find the answers? Amongst this group of men, questions were possible, and the sharing of possible views was possible. It wasn't the same in the regiment. There you were regimented. Here you were regimental.
So it was a close relationship, obviously.
Very, very close relationship. Particularly if you were performing and something went wrong, the other guy stepped in to put you right. Very quickly.
Now you said you were under great stress. But the war was over. But what was it? The conditions.
The wars
were made for the stress.
Well, okay. Let's give you an example. This is one. There's an outdoor cinema there, and we were sitting there in all this marvellous new equipment they've given us to keep warm and survive in these terrible situations. You're sitting in ammunition boxes, outdoors, viewing a screen. I remember the particular time that I was watching one of these. It was Hamlet, which I'd never seen before, but they sent us the Chinese version with English subtitles, which is very interesting. And in the middle of this, you hear two gunshots. Then I shall never, ever forget hearing from about 2.5 miles to 3 miles away a man breathing. And it's what I call stertorous breathing. Oh, 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 oh. You could hear this. What had actually happened was that some young men fresh out from UK had been on guard duty and had been not been properly supervised. This is not to excuse him, because he should have known better. After guard duty, he went into the tent and cleared his rifle. You know what I mean by that.
Just explain it for them, yeah.
Well, basically, it's a drill you go through to make sure that the rifle's not loaded. And he didn't do it properly. A shot was fired. Strangely enough, I don't understand how it did happen, but two shots were fired. But the first shot went through somebody's groin, took his penis off. And the second went into somebody's chest. The first guy was knocked back, hit the side of the tent wall, fell under the duckboards, and he wasn't found for about 2 hours. Because the guy that had been hit in the chest was the one that was noticeable noise in. It took a long time for these. Well, one of them died, and one of them was whipped away to Japan for surgery. I met him sometime later in Hong Kong. He hadn't left the army, but he a lot of suffering. Now that's just one example of the kind of things that happened out there.
So this was a sort of the stress was from a sort of a drip of accidents and
yes, cancer, that's right. And the threat that they were coming over to start the war again. It was very tenuous.
You thought that the war might start?
Oh, any time at all.
Tell us a bit more about how you felt about that.
Tried not to feel. I mean, what do? You try to ignore it. You pour yourself into what you're doing. You try to live each precious moment as though it's going to be the last, I suppose, because each note of your music is an example of the way you want to live your life.
So you were genuinely worried that the war would start again. It wasn't just a casual...
No. I mean, it hadn't really finished. It was just an armistice. It was just a break in hostilities as far as we knew. We went to some of these things did happen. We went to Weijun Bu, to the rest and recuperation place there.
Sorry?
Rest and recuperation?
The camp?
Yeah, Weijun Bu is miles away.
Do you know how you spell it? Or
no.
Okay, well...
I could probably write it in Japanese characters if you want me to.
Tell us what happened there.
Well, it was a place where you were supposed to go to rest and...
What was it like? What did it provide for you?
I remember that it was good food, a routine, and you could go out and play games. They wouldn't let me play golf after about 2 hours because I'd lost about 36 balls in the lake. They had a lake there. You could row around, you could enjoy yourself, you could swim. And I remember there was some engineers on an island which we played for just off the coast of Korea somewhere or other, who had gone bomb happy. They had developed some kind of bloody diving equipment which was a bucket and a stirrup pump, so they could attach a lead to their feet and drop down this bloody hole and explode a hand grenade at the bottom. They were mad as hatter. They were bomb happy. I remember also...
Sorry, you were going to tell some incidents that happened at the rest camp. Do you remember?
I don't remember that much sort of thing. There was
It was a good rest.
It was a good rest. It was a good place to go. There was fights. There was boxing. I took part in some, because when I was a civilian, I'd been a very competent fencer. I was foil in epee. I had to let the officers win. Strange. But I suppose one of the things I particularly remember about Gloucester Valley is that, first of all, the story of how the Gloucesters got the presidential citation. I'm not sure whether it's true or not, but we heard that there was two valleys, one on either side of the mountain Kalaksan, and the American Marines were meant to hold the Eastern Valley, I think it was, and the Gloucester Regiment would hold the Western Valley. And they were to produce a tactical withdrawal, covering each other down the valley, join at the end of the valley, and then move back through the other path to the main recruiting area. But because there was a difference in tactics, the Gloucesters dug a trench and held the trench. The US Marines, brave men, don't get me wrong, dug foxholes. And foxholes can't be held so conveniently as a trench. So they got to the end of the valley before anybody else did and were withdrawn, leaving the Gloucesters alone at the end of the valley. What I remember was at the end of our stay in that particular part was we beat a retreat.
About that.
It was probably the most moving and magnificent thing that I ever taken part in.
Well, set the scene for us. What was happening?
We were all dressed in formal military uniform, balled up to the top. I was out playing the clarinet. It was a ceremony that attracted all the heads of all the nations that had taken part in this. The Republic of Korea were very smart men, soldiers of enormous ability, discipline, and courage, kept the ground, fixed bayonets, proud men. There was over 150 musicians on parade. They marched on in complete darkness into the valley. And when the searchlights went on, the band was there just like magic, suddenly there. This was achieved by the fact that they put little sort of lights at the end of the parade ground, which were not available for the public to see, so that everybody could line up on them. They beat the retreat.
What does that, can you explain that a bit more?
So they marched.
And you were on this?
I was on this. Back and forth, counter-marched, played the various villages. Till the end they came to the last post, which was probably the most moving thing I've ever seen in music ever, because at the moment that first trumpeter it was trumpeted, la, 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 the light went on and Gloucester Hill was lit up by searchlight, and there was one huge gigantic cross. How they got it up there, I'm buggered if I know, because there were still bodies up there and the place was still a minefield. But I think anybody who was human at all would have been moved by that particular moment, because it was forceful. And it's one thing that I carry with me as a memory.
So the whole of this beating retreat was in honour of the Gloucester?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, what about the food? Can you talk about that a bit while you were there? Took from the sublime to the ridiculous.
Well, we had good stodge.
Tell us what it was. What sort of
food? I can't remember, to be honest, exactly what it was. But I remember we had turkey for about three bloody months because some bugger thought it was going to be Christmas time. And they were revolting. And you could see these bloody things boiling in oil cans, you know, all over the bloody place outside the cook. We used to go foraging.
Well,
try not to eat British food because it was horrible. The Americans had superb food and superb eating conditions.
What was wrong with the British food then?
Well, it wasn't really. The only thing it did was to keep you alive. I mean, our soldiers would live up in the bloody hills in the trenches on a cheese sandwich with bread that was turning green. The Americans, on the other hand, wouldn't go a day without the fucking ice cream. So we would always want to play for the Americans because we got good food there. We were pretty lucky compared with the rest of the regiment because we could trade as musicians our music for. I got paid in whiskey. I had a double violin case, one side for the whiskey and the other side for the violin. And occasionally people would make these kind of. I've discovered Canadian whiskey which I'd never heard of before.
So who would pay you? I mean.
Don't know. I mean, it was whoever was organising the thing. It was a bit of a mystery sometimes. But sometimes you'd get a group of people who would want to, you know, have entertainment and they want to reward you for coming out and doing something.
So these would be more informal dues, not organised
yes,
by the regiment.
Sometimes they're informal dues. There's no strict rules about this.
Now, how did you get on with the local Koreans?
We didn't see much of them. Not the local Koreans, because we weren't supposed to make contact with them at all. But when we did, they were very formal and very pleasant people.
There were no Koreans working in the camp then?
Yes, there were, and they were very nice people. And there were Korean soldiers working in the camp, brave men. Men of character. Character enough. For whatever reason it was, that one of the times that I was there, I remember they went on strike for some reason, I don't know what it was. But the rumour was that quite a few of them had been executed eventually because of the result of that in the public Korean army. It's the first time I saw what I call karate there. I saw some of them training. One of my karate historian said it must have been Shotokan karate. I can't believe that, but
because that's a big interest of yours now.
What
did you think of it when you saw it? I mean,
I was amazed. I'd never seen anything like it before. I'd heard of judo and jiu-jitsu and knew something of that. But I have a photograph here of me doing some judo somewhere along there, which I'll show you later on.
So, had you started judo at the time, or was
I knew something about judo? I'd never had any formal Japanese training. And judo is different from karate, because karate is a striking art, and judo is a sport derived from the jiu-jitsu. So, but when I went to Japan,